Spirit Blade Underground, April 2nd, 2010.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, April 2nd, 2010.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. First, before I forget, I want to remind you guys to please go over to spiritblade.net/blog. I've got a poll there. The poll question is, how involved would you likely be if a Spirit Blade Underground forum were created? If you voted already, thank you so much, but I'd really like to hear from the rest of you so I can get an accurate read and figure out if this is something that we should move forward on. So please, if you could, even multitask right now, go to spiritblade.net/blog and give me your vote. Let's see. Well, okay, let's jump into updates.
File access. Updates.
Well, I've been dropping hints about the secret project coming from Spirit Blade Productions for several months now, and I'm finally ready to let the cat out of the bag. I have long been a fan of classic musical comedies like Hello, Dolly! And The Music Man. What makes them so great is that everyone is always smiling, and even when they are sad or angry, it's all in good, clean fun. And over the years, I've seen a tremendous shortage of family-friendly Christian entertainment. There just doesn't seem to be anything safe for me and my loved ones to enjoy together. So, for the last several months, I have been secretly toiling away at developing Spirit Blade, the musical comedy. The story will pick up where Spirit Blade Dark Ritual left off and involves several hilarious ragtime numbers at the beginning to get things started. In the second act, Ran will be cured of his cyberneticism and Ebony will become an emotionally healthy Christian just in time for the two of them to be married. Vincent and Merrick will have hot cocoa and talk over their differences and then share a very warm hug with Salos. Best of all, everyone will stop using all those offensive fictional cuss words that I'm pretty sure the Bible speaks out against. The nice folks we thought were dead turn out to be alive, and the bad people all say they are sorry and humbly go to jail. The bad news is that the Shada are still bad, but the good news is at the very end, Merrick wakes up and finds out it was all a dream. He is actually not in the future and instead lives in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where he teaches children Sunday school using a flannel graph. For you blog readers, you might have noticed that I posted that on April 1st. So the better you know me, the earlier on in all of that, that you would say, "Bull crap!" The people that really know me well, the first tip-off would have been the very first statement where I said I have long been a fan of classical musical comedies like Hello, Dolly! And The Music Man. Those were two musicals that I was kind of obligated and forced to be in when several years ago, before I was a worship pastor, before Spirit Blade was even a glint really in my eye, that I was kind of obligated to be in and hated every second of it because everyone's smiling and it drives me up the wall. So basically, you can go back and listen to that entire thing again, and just about consistently the opposite of everything there is kind of how I really feel and what my plans would be for the third part of Spirit Blade. So have no fears if that really ticked you off or freaked you out reading or listening to that. It's a bunch of baloney! All right, what else? Oh yeah, I didn't post this on any of the blogs, but I did keep up a little bit with my posting this week because the trial that I'm serving on a jury on was postponed until next week. I'm not sure what that's going to mean for the podcast. Everything kind of gets set back a little bit, but I did have some more time on my hands than I had thought I would. So anyway, but I'm not sure. There is going to be a podcast next week. It's the following week I'm not sure about because I do plan to review Kick-Ass when it comes out in theaters, but it comes out like I'm leaving. I'm flying out of town for a week the day it comes out, and so I don't know if my review is going to be on time like I usually try to have them. I might not be able to get a review to you until like the next week or something. I'm not sure. But anyway, there is going to be some kind of podcast next week. I have no idea what the content is going to be yet, but there you have it. Let's see. Oh, yeah. I've been brewing up an idea for some Spirit Blade Productions t-shirts that I think would be cool, though my graphic designer has his hands full right now. But if you're handy with graphic images, you might get yours free. So I've got a contest here. It's a t-shirt contest, I'm calling it. So I put it on the blog because it is a contest. It involves t-shirts. That's why I call it that. Anyway, those participating in this contest have until the end of April to send me their submissions. Here's the deal. I know conceptually what I want, but I need someone else to bring it to life. The concept is simple, quirky, and attention-getting. You've probably seen shirts that have the same kind of feel to them. The image I'm looking for is a stacked addition math problem. It has a Christian fish symbol at the top, where the top number would be, a retro 1930s, 1950s kind of spaceship or flying saucer below that, where the next number down would be, and then in the bottom, where the bottom number would be in the addition problem, is a dragon. Then, of course, you've got the long horizontal line dividing the problem and the solution, and a plus sign off to the left indicating an addition problem. So you get that picture in your minds? You know what I'm talking about? Below the line, as the answer to our math problem, is spiritblade.net. So when someone looks at this unusual t-shirt and kind of like stops and pauses and figures it out for a second, what they should figure out, hopefully in their mind, is that Christian plus science fiction plus fantasy, or something like that, equals spiritblade.net. And if they're the kind of people that that might dig what we're doing, then even if they don't think those things stand for science fiction and fantasy specifically, they will likely be curious enough that they'll either ask the person wearing the t-shirt about it, or they'll go check out the website. So it's just kind of fun, and maybe a conversation started in just this weird kind of quirky shirt, and hopefully it'll get the word out a little bit. All images should be simple clip art type symbols, nothing complicated, just enough to be identifiable for what they are. You know, a dragon, a spaceship, and of course the Christian fish is pretty simple already. And the complete design should be using only the color white. My plan is to put this on a dark blue shirt. And only white because one color is less expensive. And for the kind of quirky feel on this, you don't want to overdo it anyway. It's less is more. I will take my three favorite submissions and test them out on several online t-shirt printing websites. So it may be handy to test it on two or three of those websites yourself. I don't mean actually print them out, but just kind of go through the motions of like importing your image to see if it's compatible with kind of the formats typically requested by those sites. I'll use the winning design to make our t-shirts, and the top three submitting designers will all get one sent to each of them for free. Submissions and any questions can be sent to Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R, at spiritblade.net. Please note that all submissions do become the sole property of Spirit Blade Productions. I could really use your help on this, guys. You've got until the end of April to be a part of Spirit Blade Productions history and get our first t-shirt before anybody else does for free. So I hope you'll be a part of that, and good luck to you. All right, today on the show, I've got a review of Clash of the Titans. And then, of course, we're still looking in the book of 2 Corinthians. We better get to it.
Primary features.
Movie review.
Although the original Clash of the Titans was among my childhood fantasy movie favorites, my memories of it are dim at best. Though I've seen enough clips of it in my adult life, you know, since then to be reminded of what the movie looked like, its general feel. You know, it's the kind of thing where if it comes on, I'll sit down and watch it for 20 minutes or whatever to kill the time. But it's been probably since junior high or maybe earlier that I've sat down for a complete viewing of it from beginning to end. But I do, like I said, I've got enough refreshers since then to remember the general feel, the state of special effects, and what the movie looked like in general. Because of this, I was able to make a few comparisons to the original when I saw the 2010 remake, but not enough that the original or its plot was constantly on my mind. I went to see the new Clash because I'm a diehard fan of fantasy, sword and sorcery flicks, and this looked like it could be one of them. And it was, with both the good and bad that comes with that sort of movie. Despite the sometimes edgier dialogue and advanced special effects, Clash of the Titans feels much like several fantasy movies of the 70s and 80s. What do I mean by that? Well, they're like those movies in that The characters are two-dimensional, with Sam Worthington's Perseus and Liam Neeson's Zeus being the only two with any discernible traces of character development. And it's you know, you gotta look, you gotta watch closely to see those shifts in their character. The acting is generally shallow and the plot extremely simple, but there are many classics in this genre that share these traits. So if you've been able to enjoy those, you might be able to enjoy this one as well without it suffering too much. You know, nostalgia may cloud our judgment, but if we're really honest, you and I, with each other, then these kinds of attributes, these kinds of failings, were the rule and not the exception of fantasy movies in the 70s and 80s. The action sequences are very good and have the visceral flair common to fight scenes since 300, though without, of course, the same extravagance that Zack Snyder accomplished in 300. I don't think really any film since then has really accomplished that kind of visceral flair, as I would put it. But this one had some signs of that. Some, you could see just some minor influences. The creature effects look very much like CGI. And the Medusa, painfully so. To my eye, this Medusa looks just as artificial as the original, just for different reasons. A considerable letdown. However, the magical effects in this movie were stunning in their best moments. Hades looks awe-inspiring in the midst of his dark, smoky splendor. Just this grand, dark entity. I mean, it's great. And this movie may end up on my shelf someday for that reason alone. Makeup effects are also fascinating to look at. The witches and the djinn being among my favorites. There was also a cool wound that looked really nasty that Perseus got at one point that I was like, on the whole, this movie has a dark, slightly washed out feel in the colors that conveys a bleak despair uncommon to film portrayals, in my experience anyway, of Greek myth. A welcome change of pace from the sterile white togas common to classic depictions of Greek mythology. Now, despite these strong points, the movie needed, I think, 15 minutes more of something. Either more character development or more special effects and adventure. After some exciting opening sequences, the movie slows down and introduces characters without fleshing them out before they die or leave. There's one guy that's kind of one of his fighting companions that's a little bit over the top and in his acting. I'm like, oh man, that's an actor making a bunch of actor choices. This is not a person, you know? And there's like these two comic relief guys that come in, but you know, they're not really funny ever. And oh, there was one little bit by the fire, you know, that's when they're camping once, that's, you know, got a mild, you know, out of me. But yeah, they're really not funny. And then they're gone before you know it. And they show up later on, like we're supposed to like, hey, I remember those guys. I like those guys. Good to see him again. You know, but they just didn't earn it. They're these, you know, I feel like there's almost like there's footage of them missing or something that that was supposed to endear us to them more. But anyway, you know, these characters and, you know, introducing them and then not doing anything with them, it just slows the movie down. And although the giant CGI scorpions in this movie were cool, you probably saw them in the trailer, they spent a little too much time on them. I would rather have seen less of them and the film made more time for an additional unique obstacle or monster or something for the heroes to overcome. Now, regarding the 3D, in case that's on your mind, I opted to see this movie in 2D. The reason is I learned that just earlier today, before going to see the movie, I learned that unlike Avatar and other recent 3D films, Clash was never intended to be in 3D from the get-go. It was hastily converted to 3D in a mere 8 weeks. In an interview with, if you clicked on the Yahoo blurb today and read into this, you probably read the same thing, but James Cameron was kind of interviewed about the 3D process and kind of what it takes to do that, you know, from the get-go, and then what's involved in upscaling a movie to 3D. And I think he's had some experience with that too. I think his Titanic underwater movie was upscaled to 3D, and he might have been a part of that. But anyway, you know, Jim Cameron can come across like a little bit of a snob, you know. But I thought that his words, you know, I still valued his words because, you know, right now he's the guy that's done the most with 3D in film. And he said that for a good upscaled movie, the minimum amount of time is 6 to 12 months. And these guys did Clash of the Titans in 8 weeks. And multiple reviewers, and my parents, I'll add, mostly agree that it's not worth the money to see it in 3D, and some have even said that it even makes the movie worse because of the poor conversion and the unintended side effects it has in the film. My dad saw it in 3D, and he said that there's this weird kind of blurring or this stuttering effect that sometimes happens in some of the action sequences that looked a little unusual, and he thinks that it might have been because of the 3D effects that they try to do. It just kind of was weird to the eye. Just kind of some unintended side effects going on there that can potentially make the film worse in 3D. So I do apologize for not braving the 3D experience on your behalf, but before a reviewer, I am a geek first and foremost, and I wanted every chance to enjoy a new fantasy film as much as possible, because they just don't come out that often, especially dark fantasy movies for grown-ups, you know. Now, a very strong theme in the first act is that of humanity versus the gods, or humanity versus the mystic powers that be, you might be a little bit more general in saying. The gods are blamed for every ill that comes upon man, and I think deservedly so. There is a scene at the beginning where this one guy who's a fisherman says, "Oh, I blame the gods because my career as a fisherman is failing because I'm not catching fish, da 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 da." And, you know, sure, the writers could have dictated in the movie that, yes, that was the gods' fault, but if we transplant that into the real world, I think there was some kind of transplanting going on. They were trying to incorporate into the movie feelings that we commonly have about, like, you know, I mean, why? What's going on? Why, universe? Why, you know, as people might say, you know, to a vague entity instead of, you know, saying, why, God, why, you know, or whatever. But we kind of ask those questions when life isn't going well. Someone out there is against me, or whatever, you know. And in this movie, the gods are blamed for it. And as far as the fishing thing, the movie never answers the question about whether a god was being petty and said, no fish for you, or something like that, you know. The gods are shown to be petty in other ways, but they never make it clear in the film if that is substantiated as not as being like something legitimate that the gods could be blamed for in this movie. So, but you know, I'm not defending the gods in this movie. They do come across as petty. The way gods are portrayed in this movie likely paints a good picture of how many people, I think, view God. I would wager that for many people, the only difference between the Christian God and the gods in this movie is that all of the character traits split up between multiple gods in this movie are present in one god in Christianity. You know, he's loving, but he's also, you know, petty and kind of mean sometimes, and, you know, he's got his own agenda, and he just gets sick and tired of us, and, you know, but he kind of likes us, he cares about us too, and that, you know, so we might kind of have that picture of God, I think, when we're not really looking at biblically what's going on, what's being said about God. I think a great question on the drive home from this movie might be, you know, and you can bring it up however you want, like, you know, this is interesting how they portrayed the gods. You know, it makes me kind of wonder, if God exists, what ways do you think we are like him, and in what ways do you think we aren't like him? To a certain extent, we have to see God in human terms. We have to anthropomorphize him, to use a fancy term, comparing his characteristics to human ones. But if this is taken too far, well, we wind up with a view of God very much like the gods of this movie. Impotent, needy. I mean, the gods in this movie actually need worship from people to be powerful. And you see that a lot in fiction. But God does not need us. The Bible makes it very clear that God does not need us at all. He's completely content without us. But they're portrayed as needing humans, needing our love, being petty, and being ignorant. You know, there's this kind of idea of, like, how the gods can learn a lesson from humans. You know, the humans taught me a lesson. Oh, you know, I'm sorry, you know, we should have been more like you, Perseus. I'm sorry on behalf of the gods, you know. In other words, the gods are portrayed more like us than we'd like to admit. And by contrast, we view ourselves as basically good. And in this movie, it's the humans are the heroes, the gods are the bad guys. It's a little bit like, you know, what I was talking about when I saw the movie Legion, although not nearly as pronounced in this movie. I think you can enjoy this movie, especially after the first third, the first act of the movie. I think you can enjoy this movie as just a, you know, crazy fantasy movie without getting all philosophical and you know, no reason to get uptight, I don't think, about this movie. But there is a strong theme in the first third, like I said. You know, but anyway, like I said, by contrast, we view ourselves as basically good. Maybe we even feel, as the humans do in this movie, that a certain deity needs to learn a lesson, and we are the ones to teach him, right? All in all, I think Clash of the Titans provides an easy springboard for finding out a person's view of God's characteristics and can certainly be valued on that level, and as well for some of the fantasy elements as well. It just depends on what you care about in a movie, what's really vital to you. It's rated PG-13 for fantasy, action, violence, some frightening images, and brief sensuality. I give it a quality of 8.0 out of 10 and a relevance of 8.5 out of 10.
For over 300 years, one story has captured the imagination of millions. One mythical journey has never been more real. A solitary life perseveres on the quest for truth. And though he travels alone, we stand at his side. For his story is our story.
This book contains the secrets of the universe.
I'm cursed by a dark power that drains the life from me.
That's why I must get to the Mystic City, where the Absolute can purge my curse and recreate me. It's the only way I'll survive.
Do you think of yourself as religious?
I don't know. I'm a man after the truth, wherever it leads me.
Religion is complicated and convoluted. You don't know what you're getting yourself into.
You'll run into many paths near this one while traveling. They'll be crooked and wide.
You have to learn to discern the truth. Sharpen your mind and do not be deceived.
Run, liquid silver. Run.
A storm made of fire is coming, and this city will be destroyed.
There's a dark power at work here. This place is called the Swamp of Dread Gloom.
If you keep going this way, you'll have swords at your throat, dragons at your back, and in the end, death.
The choice is yours, Christopher. It has always been yours.
Spirit Blade Productions presents a reimagining of the classic tale by John Bunyan, Pilgrim's Progress. The quest begins at spiritblade.net.
Every word of God proves true. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 8. We're looking at verses 16 through 22 this week, and I'm going to read that from the NIV translation. I thank God who put into the heart of Titus the same concern I have for you. For Titus not only welcomed our appeal, but he is coming to you with much enthusiasm and on his own initiative. And we are sending along with him the brother who is praised by all the churches for his service to the gospel. What is more, he was chosen by the churches to accompany us as we carry the offering, which we administer in order to honor the Lord himself and to show our eagerness to help. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift, for we are taking pains to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of men. In addition, we are sending with them our brother who has often proved to us in many ways that he is zealous, and now even more so because of his great confidence in you. In Paul's words about the men being sent to Corinth, we can see some ideal traits to cultivate in ourselves and to look for in church leaders. Titus was a ministry partner with Paul and had already spent time with the Corinthian Christians. We see that in chapter 7, verses 6 through 7, verse 13 and verse 15, all in chapter 7 there. Like Paul, Titus had developed love and concern for the Corinthians and took initiative in going back to Corinth to help organize and facilitate the collection of their gift to the suffering Jerusalem Christians. That's taken from verses 16 and 17. The second member of the team visiting Corinth was an unnamed believer who had gained a reputation for his dedication to the gospel. Now, just a quick reminder of the definition for a fairly churchy kind of word, gospel. It's from the Greek word euangelion, meaning good news. Paul uses this word specifically to refer to the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ and the interpretation of these facts. So the gospel is the basic truth of who Jesus is, what he did for us, and what it means for us now and forever. That's all wrapped up in that term, gospel. This unnamed believer was also appointed by multiple churches to help transport the financial gift from Corinth to Jerusalem. Now, it should be noted that there was a significant risk involved in the task of moving financial resources from one city to another. I mean, there were no wire transfers or armored trucks. After all, bandits were a serious danger to travelers. The men going to Corinth were brave, compassionate, trustworthy, and motivated to serve and honor God in the way they conducted themselves. I take that from verse 19. Now, although God is our ultimate judge, Paul didn't think it was unimportant what people thought of him and his associates. Paul understood, as we should, that someone's perception of an individual Christian can affect their perception of Christ and the Bible. That may not seem to make sense to you, that their perception of the Christian would change their view of the Bible, but that's very true. So he made it a priority to avoid behavior that would discredit himself or his message. Look at verses 20 and 21. Paul also sent another unnamed believer to help collect the gift. Paul said that this man had been tested and found diligent in many things. Sometimes we may want to dive right into exciting, important roles, you know, when we feel inspired or like, yeah, put me in charge of that. I want to do it. Let's make it happen. I want to accomplish this for God, you know. But it's important that we are tested by lesser responsibilities before taking on the bigger ones. I take that from verse 22. So, you know, if you want to jump into something and somebody that's in charge of kind of delegating responsibilities doesn't want to give you that and would rather you do something that has less responsibilities to it, don't take that as a blow or like as an insult. There's a biblical principle laid out here that it's a good idea to kind of get practice and be tested in some smaller areas before tackling the bigger ones. Now, next week, I'm going to take a look at the idea of helping each other to follow through. And the coffeehouse question this week, what experience or roles do you think God has given you in the past in order to test you for a current or future role? What do you think that current or future role might be? Personally, I've been just kind of on a roller coaster in terms of, you know, what God has taken me through. I mean, God gave me experiences artistically earlier that made me think, okay, I'm going down this path. I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to do the Hollywood thing, da-da-da-da. And then I got yanked off that path, and then I was in college, and okay, I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to, you know, do the vocal recording artist thing. Yeah, that's my path. This is my path. And I got yanked off that, you know, and I see that God was refining me artistically to prepare me for what I'm doing now, because what I'm doing now incorporates all of those things, all of my loves and all of my kind of skills that I've picked up along the way. I also see it spiritually, that that the time I had serving under the worship pastor previous to me, and then the 2 years when I was leading as a worship pastor at my church, very formative time for me spiritually in terms of I gained my love for theology and philosophy really during those 2 to 4 years, which really plays into, you know, my ministry now. And then also just relating to people and resolving conflict and stuff like that really prepared me for some difficult conversations that I've had, some on the phone, some on email, about the content that I'm presenting, because I recognize that the content that I present in my audio dramas is a little bit intense, and some Christians are like, ooh, you know, and some Christians even come out and say, what you're doing is wrong, you know. And so I think that having some of those difficult conversations with people as a worship pastor prepared me for handling some complex, difficult, and sometimes tense topical discussions now. So that's kind of some of the, just off the top of my head, some of the stuff that I see in which God has tested me to prepare me for what's coming next. I don't know what he might be preparing me for next. I've got my guesses, but I've had guesses all through my life, and he keeps yanking me off the path I think I'm on. So, but I would like to get your thoughts on this. What experiences or roles do you think God has given you in the past in order to test you or refine you in some way for a current or future role? And what do you think that current or future role might be. You can email me at paeter@spiritblade.net or call me and leave a message that I can play on the show, 206-350-1226. Just a reminder again to go and check out that poll if you haven't already. I would really appreciate it. Spiritblade.net/blog. And then, of course, the t-shirt contest. I hope you'll be a part of that. I really don't know what's going to be on the podcast next week. I'm basically going to be, unless something happens and, you know, it's resolved out of court or whatever, this trial is going to be all week, keeping me very busy. And I didn't see any movies coming out on DVD or in theaters, you know, that I would be reviewing. So at this point, I really don't know what I'm going to do for content next week. I've got I actually got two emails that I didn't share this week that I'm going to wait and share next week, but I don't think that'll fill up the whole show. So if you have a review you want to send my way for a book, a game, a movie, a TV show, whatever, as long as it's kind of geeky and fits the theme of our show here, I would love to get that from you, and I can either read it or if you leave a recorded message, I can play it on the show. But I'd love for you to be involved in this, so that's just a timely call out once again for you guys to plug in and join me in being a part of this this show here. That's it. I'm going to shut up before I destroy the ending as I always do. So have a great week, guys. And here I am trying to figure out a clever way to incorporate the key phrase that we always end with. I don't know. Here's what I'm going to do. You do the lead-in, okay? You do the lead-in, and I'll finish, okay? So here's your lead-in. We'll have a moment of silence while you do the lead-in. It's going to be brilliant. Ready? Here's your lead-in, and... seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.